Kay Jackson, Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation, a Civic Media station.
CBS News Brief, FBI agents who worked on the investigations into President Trump are fearing for their jobs and their safety. More from CBS's Scott McFarland.
They were part, under orders, of the investigation into January 6th, and that has metastasized into some form of a search for retribution that's going to fall on their shoulders.
A judge has blocked Trump's proposed buyout offer for federal employees. Jackie Simon with the American Federation of Government Employees is urging caution.
It's a very, very bad deal for the employee under certain circumstances. It absolves the government from any liability for anything forever.
The deadline to apply is now Monday. Hundreds of USAID workers are being ordered home from abroad. CBS's Alexander Tin says many of them are about to be unemployed.
Less than 300 workers out of some 14,000 staff at USAID will be kept on the job in just the latest move by the Trump administration to effectively shutter much of the agency.
CBS News Brief. I'm Michael Wallace.
Enjoying this local program?
Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
For 540 WAUK News, I'm Stuart J. Wattles. The search for Milwaukee Public Schools' new superintendent entered its final stage today with public meet and greets. There are three finalists, and they'll have final interviews with the board tomorrow. The three introduced themselves this morning and spent time fielding questions. The school board aims to announce the new superintendent by late February or early March. A school bus crash in Milwaukee this morning resulted in one person being seriously injured. A Chevy Impala slammed into the back of a parked bus near 76th and Hampton. Milwaukee Public Schools says there were no children on the bus at the time. The 37-year-old driver of the Impala was taken to a hospital with serious injuries. People gathered to pray for the safe return of the Beaver Dam teen. Savannah Tomei Olson has the latest on the search.
16-year-old Sophia Franklin was last seen Sunday night at her home. Police believe she was abducted by 40-year-old Gary Day, who got her pregnant. According to the criminal complaint, Day was seen on the family's security cameras Monday morning. An Amber Alert was issued earlier this week for Sophia and is still active. Day has been charged with child enticement and abduction. The criminal complaint shows he started talking with her online in April of last year. And in December, her parents thought she was at a friend's house, but instead, a probation officer checking up on Day in Arkansas found her at his home. Now authorities across the country are looking for them. Last night, people gathered at Bible Baptist Church in Beaver Dam for a vigil. They lit candles and prayed for Sophia's safe return home.
MCTS should address driver fatigue and poor working conditions. That's the response from the union repping the bus driver facing serious charges after a fatal Christmas Day crash on a county bus. Montrell Farm is the driver involved. Cameras from the bus allegedly show him dozing off before the impact. And that's news on 540 WAUK. I'm Stuart J. Wattles.
More trade deals by the Bucks. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. We told you about the Bucks trading 33-year-old Chris Middleton to the Wizards for two players, Kyle Kuzma and former UWM star Patrick Baldwin. Today, the Bucks sent Baldwin and some cash to the San Antonio Spurs. That opened up a roster spot for Milwaukee, so they traded third-year man Marjon Beauchamp to the Clippers for Kevin Porter Jr., a 24-year-old point guard. Last night, the Bucks added Jericho Sims, a fourth-year center from the Knicks, for guard DeLon Wright. Meanwhile, the Bucks beat the Hornets last night in Charlotte, 112-102. That ended a four-game losing streak. Afterwards, Brooke Lopez talked about when he learned that the team had traded Chris Middleton.
So I wasn't aware of it until Doc mentioned it at a film session, so it definitely hit me as a shock. You know, I've known Chris for a long time now, you know, I've gotten to know him personally. So I had to fight from tearing up a little bit, honestly. You know, it was an emotional moment for me.
That's the Bucks' Brooke Lopez. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Breezy this evening, then the wind dying down later tonight. A mostly clear sky with a low in the low teens. For tomorrow, a mixture of sunshine and clouds and a high near 30. Then some snow developing for Saturday, an inch or two of accumulation. Right now it's 33.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. don't find yourself saying,
"When the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out."
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
The argument from my former party has been, it's not the guns, it's mental health. Well, no worries, folks. Governor Evers has got you covered. He introduced a plan to put millions of dollars into mental health, particularly for young kids. And the Republicans in the chamber did not clap. If you can't be it for kids, then what the heck can you be for? Jeepers, criminy.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. Earl Ingram.
Coming up on the next show, we'll talk with Sandy Williams about Donald Trump's disgusting comments regarding Gaza and continue our discussion on MAGA takeover of the federal government.
The Earl Ingram Show. Weekday mornings, 8 till 10.
A voice for real news and great conversation in Milwaukee. 540 WAUK.
With Pete Schwabba. Pete is feeling a little under the weather tonight, so we're going to have a best of show with lots of fun guests. I hope you enjoy, and we'll be back tomorrow for a great show.
Broadcasting live from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. Whatever gets you through the night, it's all right, it's all right. And now, a guy who once tore his ACL playing chess, Pete Schwabba.
Welcome back to Nightlight. Conrad, we got a text from Steady Eddie. We got to hold on to that nugget, though. It's the theme tonight, the nugget. We'll save...
Steady Eddie. Interesting.
Some nights he's Steady Eddie. Some nights he's Steadfast Edward. He's a little more distinguished, so right. He always gives us
is
good
Is he text. Steady Eddie tonight?
He didn't really specify. Oh, Steadfast Edward tonight.
Oh,
there's a PS there, though, as long Taking as a seriously. Leon Uris book. Oh, my God. He's got great texts. They're fun. My guest is Paige McKenna. She is here in studio with us. She's the director and filmmaker, the creative force behind the documentary Gold, which is set in Spread Eagle, Wisconsin at the Gold Nugget Strip Club. And so we talked a little bit, Paige, about, you know, empowerment versus exploitation. How do you, as a director, with your leading ladies, so to speak, you want to take care of them. You just said you love that they had a safe environment to work for Dusty at the Gold Nugget. How do you walk that line as a director between being exploitative, and, you know, empowering?
Yeah, that's a very good question. It was, I think, just, you know, being a really true storyteller was like the way that I did it. You know, really, it's not focusing on... I could have made this film a bunch of different ways, right? I could have made it as a very tragic, you know, very like
right.
pulling at your heartstrings like film. But instead, it's really just like, what's next? You know, what's
yeah.
And we all have like pasts, but we shouldn't dwell on the past. We should, you know, dwell in the present and look to the future. And I think that the exploitative portions maybe focus more in the past. But with the women that I've interviewed, we have really like made sure to focus on like the present and the future. And I think that, you know, for anyone that that kind of rings true.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Do they, these girls, are they, you said they're safe when they're in the club. There's a bouncer who takes care of them and he's a good guy.
Jim's an angel.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but do they travel? Is there a circuit or... Do they work just for, in this case, Dusty? Do they have like a home club? How does that work?
Yeah, so typically, and it's up, you know, it's women specific, but typically a woman will not dance in her hometown or anywhere near her hometown because she doesn't necessarily want people she recognizes to see
sure.
her at a club. And so a lot of these women are, you know, driving from 2 to 4 hours away to come okay. work at the club. So I find that really fascinating too, because it's like, you know, they really have to plan, you know, out, you know, their weekends
yeah, yeah.
and, you know, and so what was the second part of your question?
Do they have like a home club?
Yeah. Okay. Yes. So from, you know, working with the girls at the Nugget, they have all said that, like, they drive up there for the structure and for dust, the way that Dusty runs the club. I mean, some of the girls that come from the UP, you know, there's not a whole lot of options for clubs. Right. Like, that's the closest club to the girls in the UP. But, like, for women from Milwaukee, or, you know, they could go work at, you know, a club in Pulaski or North Point, sure, or whatever. But they choose to drive up because of the way it's run and because of how much sisterhood that's there. And that's what I really noticed, you know, after my research of going to a couple different clubs, like, the Gold Nugget has the sisterhood. And, you know, if I were to work at a club, I'd work at the Gold Nugget, because you walk in there and you can just feel, as a female, you can feel the sense of, like, this is like, the girls are watching out for each other too. Right. It's not that competition that you hear about most strip clubs. You know, I remember Gypsy, one of the women in the film, she was telling me, this didn't make it into the film, but she had said, like, she'd worked at clubs, like, in, you know, on the East Coast, and there would be girls that would steal your stuff. You know, had like lockers and things. And she said she loves the Nugget. She can just leave her stuff out and nobody's going to touch it. Like, there's so much respect at the Gold Nugget. So,
you mentioned North Point. I drive by North Point every night when I come here.
Yeah.
And it's something like, I've heard people talk about it. People in the area go there, and I've been asked, do you ever go there? And I'm like, no, I don't, you know, there's other places I'd go for brunch on a Sunday. Yeah. But I am truly curious, and I told you when you got here, like, a bunch of people from the set when I made a movie up there, The Godfather of Green Bay, went there. It was like 20 people. They made a night of it, made it fun. Those are the only circumstances I think I would even go to a club like that in my hometown.
Yep.
But I'm truly curious. And you can't say that, though, because, oh, sure you are. But, you know, right. I am curious, like, as to when you say Dusty is protective and all that, and she used to be a dancer. Well, you kind of already answered that. I'm going to pivot here.
Okay.
How long were you into this project when you knew it was something, or at what point did you think, I want to spend, because these documentaries take, you have to be patient.
Yeah.
They take a year, two, sometimes 10.
Yep.
At what point did you know, I want to spend this much time of my life shooting this project?
I think when Stacey approached me.
Right, like, away.
Yeah. Yeah. I could tell, like, there was, you know, there was a sense about her where I was like, I really, like, I'm invested. I was already invested. And I think it was just, like, woman to woman. Like, part of my filmmaking journey so far, I mean, kind of by accident, has been empowering women. And I just think that that's a real passion of mine. And so for her to kind of drop that in my lap, and I knew it was going to be very uncomfortable for me. I grew up very Catholic.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. And so, you know, stepping foot in a club was like, and so, you know,
I don't think I'm supposed to be here.
Right. I'm going to get lit on fire or something, you know, but.
That's some good old Catholic guilt for you.
Yeah, for sure. And so, you know, I had said yes. And then I thought about it. I remember, like, going home and thinking about it. I'm like, well, I'm in, you know, I guess I'm in, I'm all in.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, my head started spinning in the best way, where I was like, this is another thing that I feel like I'm supposed to do. And it, because I was learning things as well, you know, I'm learning through the process. And that's another thing that's really important to me as a filmmaker, is like, do I learn things from the work that I'm
doing?
Does
that make you a better filmmaker when you're like, I have a lot to learn here?
Oh, absolutely.
So my approach to this is going to be, I'm an open book.
Yeah.
Lay it on me, you know?
And curiosity is huge for me as a filmmaker. Like, I seek out subjects that I'm curious about and that I want to learn more about. And I want to grow my mind for humanitarian reasons.
So, all right, one more question about Gold. For any independent filmmaker, it's hard to raise money.
Mm.
Oh, you know, whether you think you got a blockbuster on your hands or a documentary that might be tough to get people to see. You have a subject matter here that could be controversial.
Oh, yeah.
I think more and more different lifestyles are accepted in our society. But was it hard to raise money given your subject matter?
You know, it wasn't. Like, I would say people were more supportive of this film than my first film, which I found really interesting. And I think I was very, very surprised at the community of Green Bay really rallying behind me on this. Hmm. Like, I thought of Green Bay. Part of me still thinks of Green Bay as like more of a conservative town. And, you know, people aren't necessarily standing on soapboxes, you know, preaching about these sort of topics in the community. And so I, you know, as a filmmaker, you kind of grow a thick skin of like being rejected or, you know, people saying no to grants that you apply for and things. But really, I think the biggest thing for me was the Canary Fund had written me a seed grant and given me a seed grant. And I actually sit on their board now. I have my first meeting with them this week or next week. Yeah. So they were able to, you know, see the work that I'm doing. And that was kind of, you know, they approached me and said, like, we'd love for you to be a part of this next generation of, you know, supporting artists. So, yeah, that means a lot to me.
So, all right. So two more questions for you. What was the response? You talked about Dusty's response, the owner of the Gold Nugget. What were the other, your other actresses, so to speak, what was their response to the film?
I would say overall amazing, but they were shocked, I think, at first. I think they were shocked by the production value of the film. I'm very proud of that. I've had a group of the best professionals in the area supporting me in this, in the creation of this film.
Nice.
My bosses at Shift Visuals.
That's convenient, huh?
And so they really supported me through it. So I think, and now I'm losing track of the thought.
What were the other dancers' response to?
They were blown away. You know, I had some. They had to take time, I think, to process, especially after the Iron Mountain showing. But I'll never forget. There was a picture I took of Sylvia, the youngest dancer, and we kind of, you know, dragged her out to eat with us before and stuff. And so she walked into the theater, and the beginning credit sequence is rolling. And I'm the most proud of that sequence because it's kind of a kick in the pants. but she walked in and she saw herself on screen and she just stopped, and I'll never forget. And I took a picture of her with herself on the screen. This huge, you know, image of her, and she's just standing there in awe, and you can just see she was just kind of blown away, like, I look like that, you know. And it's the girls look hot, like they're beautiful on camera. And like, I think that was another thing that they realized is like, they're beautiful inside and out. And so yeah, I was blown away at and that's all that matters to me.
Yeah,
you know, like
absolutely.
If the film flopped, you know, I just wanted them to love it. So
my guest is Paige McKenna. She is the director and creative force behind Gold, a documentary about the Gold Nugget Strip Club in Spread Eagle, Wisconsin. Can you stick around? We've do another quick break, but I have more filmmaking questions to ask you, and I want to ask you about Seeds too. But where can people see Gold? Is it out there yet? Or
No. So it's making the festival run right now. So, you know, maybe it'll get picked up for distribution, hopefully. But it takes about a year for the festival run. So 2026 sometime.
What festivals do you have coming up? Because that's a place people can see it on the big screen. And that's the way to see a film, any film, I think.
Mm-hmm, I do too. we're doing two more showings local in Appleton coming up in February. So if you all like check, we have a website, goldthedocumentary.com. We update our screenings on there, but we just got accepted into the Beloit Film Festival.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. I've heard really good things about Beloit.
Me too. Yeah. It's been going on for like 20, 25 years or something. Yeah. So that's kind of, it's cool. It's good.
Have you tried Driftless or Wisconsin?
Wisconsin, I did. Okay. It didn't get accepted yet, but I did apply. So
still waiting to hear.
Yeah, still waiting to hear. So.
All right. Well, we've got a few more questions for Paige. She's going to hang out with us for a few more minutes before we bring in Lisa Hale, who is going to give me a movie line quiz, folks. You're not going to want to miss that. And she's going to talk about her show tomorrow, New Wisco Weekend, which is always fun. This is Peach Wabba and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond. 540 WAUK.
540 WAUK presents This Week in Waukesha, now a weekly podcast.
Hey, this is Downtown Donnie Brown, acting locally, thinking globally. On This Week in Waukesha podcast 2, my guest is Mia's restaurant owner, Bo Blask, talking about the challenges facing downtown businesses, independent restaurateurs, and the future for our growing downtown. Join us on civicmedia.us/shows.
A weekly podcast from WAUK.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government
Buy-in for the people. A New Hampshire Senate bill just killed in committee would have moved the state's four presidential electoral votes to a winner-by-district system from a winner-take-all. Nebraska, the only state besides Maine which apportions its electoral votes by district, is trying to end it. The National Conference of State Legislatures defines a winner-take-all system as one where the winning candidate's party, no matter the margin of victory, gets all of the electoral votes. Currently in Nebraska, which has five electoral votes, and Maine, which has four, one electoral vote is awarded for each congressional district a candidate wins, and the candidate who wins the popular vote statewide gets the rest. New Hampshire is currently a winner-take-all state with two congressional districts. SB 11 would have adopted the Nebraska and Maine model, likely in anticipation of gerrymandering a guaranteed GOP congressional district. But February 5th, the Senate Election and Municipal Affairs Committee recommended that it be killed in an upcoming full Senate vote. The AP reports that Nebraska's GOP is irritated that candidates Obama, Biden, and Harris won an electoral vote from Greater Omaha's Congressional District 2. Another legislative attempt to end it appears doomed to fail by filibuster, so state Republicans are preparing a ballot measure instead, hoping the voters will change what the legislature could not. We have links to the local reporting and more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Your new choice. Real news. Great conversation. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back. We have a few more minutes here with our really fun guest. It's been so nice to meet you, Paige, and thank you for coming into the studio.
Thank you for having me. It's
You're
been
welcome.
A blast.
Yeah. She's a director of the film Gold. It's a documentary that was shot here in northern Wisconsin, actually, in Spread Eagle, Wisconsin, set at a strip club called the Gold Nugget. And the film is called Gold. It's on the festival circuit right now. It'll be out soon. I'm sure it'll get picked up somewhere. That's exciting.
Yeah, thank you.
You have another film. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that, because we can see that one. That's on YouTube for free right now.
Yep.
So tell us about your first film you did.
Yeah. So Seeds of Life is about a woman from Brazil who she lived in Haiti for 25-30 years on the border area. So of the Dominican Republic and Haiti. Okay. So she is like, I like to compare her to like a Mother Teresa as far as like her knowledge, her wealth of knowledge, her humanitarianism.
It's a big habit to fill.
Yeah, for sure. Yes. And so I had gone out there to do just some mission work, I guess.
Just
couple
separate
years.
Of
yep.
movie making. You
yep.
just went there out of the goodness of your heart.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Good for you.
I worked at Kohler Company at the time, actually, in corporate, and quit my job to have that experience.
To go do...
Just
wow.
work. Yeah, mission work.
Conrad, I see that path for you. Have you ever have you thought about joining the Peace Corps since you've been working here?
I can't say I have. I'm sorry.
That's the difference between me and you. And you and Paige.
Yeah,
Conrad,
but
he gets paid mostly just because I give him a hard time. The work is easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome. I love it.
But he gives it back to me.
Yeah, well, that's important.
I'm the weirdest person he's ever met.
Yes,
so.
Yeah, that's still true.
It's an exaggeration, but sorry. Continue.
No, you're good. And so, yeah, I had gone to my boss and I said, you know, I really like to take 2 weeks off. And I was a contracted position at the time. I had been there 2 years. And he's like, I don't think I can swing that for you. And I said, well, here's my 2 week notice then. Cause I just knew I learned so much from Kohler in the corporate world, yeah. but I knew it wasn't for me. And this was an opportunity I couldn't pass up. So I went to Haiti 2 weeks later and just kind of took everything in. And when I was there, I had worked with, her name is Maria Marciano. I had worked with her, just like we built like walls for a dental clinic that was a pop-up dental clinic there. Oh. And, I just remember thinking, I was so nervous around her. Like, I was just like, you are like God in my eyes. Like, she was just like, so like together with it, kind of like a, you know, really a hard, you know, woman, like where
right.
like, she was very intimidating. And, I got back to the States and my life was changed. Cause I'm like, this is like, how am I have drinking water, like right over there. Like yeah. I can just walk to the sink. Like this is nuts. So I had a really hard time like adapting back into society. I was only there for 2 weeks, but it really changed my life. And so I immediately started fundraising and brought her the idea. And I said, can I make a film about you? And I thought for sure she'd say no. Cause she's the most humble woman I've ever met in my life. And she was like, we'll do what we have to do. So she was like,
yes, yeah, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. It was her way of saying yes. And so I raised funds through GoFundMe. Took about a year. I had no idea what I was doing at that point because it was my first film.
Yeah.
And then I dragged two dudes along with me. Each stayed for a week. One is Josh Kufall. He's a local. He shoots cinematography.
Okay.
So he's a local freelancer to Green Bay. And then Pete Olson from Madison area, he also came with me. So together we made the film, and it was all in Portuguese and French Creole. And so when I was out there,
just to make your life even tougher.
Right. For my first film.
Yeah, for your first film.
So I had to come up with the questions. I knew the story I wanted to tell, but you know, that the translating had to happen twice, you know, English to Spanish, Spanish to Portuguese, Spanish to French Creole. And I remember Maria told me, you know, through a translator, like, all right, you're going to this place today. And it was called Tiralee, and it was 3 hours away. And I was on the back of a moped with a man that I couldn't communicate with who had a gun with him as protection. So wow. That was really like a wake up, like, okay, am I going to be kidnapped?
That must have made you feel like an actual documentary filmmaker, kind of in a dangerous area. Yeah.
That's probably the coolest story I ever have. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. It was really neat. But at the time I was like, am I ever going to like see America again?
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
And most, it was the language barrier, and I never felt like such an idiot before in my life of not being able to communicate. But anyway, long story short, I got back to the States, got everything translated, and then I realized I have a film here. And so I made a film that is really, really eye-opening, and it did really well in the festival circuit.
Nice.
And it did well. It's been well-received. So yeah, that's on YouTube for free if you just look up Seeds of Life documentary.
Seeds of Life, Paige McKenna documentary.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know where I'd feel like a big idiot is if I went down there to do like what you did, like you just said you had to put up walls and build walls. I'm not handy. So I feel like I would get there and they'd be like, okay, you can't do that. No. Why are you here? Are you completely useless? Or like, is there other stuff to do? Like,
can you
just carry the wood over there?
Okay. Yeah. There was other things to do. There was like, we had to tie rebar as part of like the thing, which I've never tied rebar since, but that was a cool skill to learn. You know, and then there was welding opportunities. Like there's really, she'll take you anywhere.
Sounds really terrible.
Yeah. It was nice to be out of the heat for a while, or out of the cold, sorry, because it was,
We have about a minute left, Paige. This has been so much fun. What are you watching on TV that you could recommend? Are you binge watching anything? Do you only watch documentaries? Do you like other films? Give us something we can work with here.
Okay. Well, so I'm going to have to plug the movie Anora.
I've heard it's great. I have not seen it yet. Okay.
Oh, my gosh. Well, it came out kind of the same time like I was filming Gold, and actually Sean Baker, the director, found gold and donated $50 to GoFundMe. Yeah. And then one of the women in the film, her name's Luna. She plays kind of a minor role. She plays Anora's best friend in the film, another dancer. Her and I connected, and we've like FaceTimed, and we've like been texting. Yeah. And so she's incredible. And so Sean Baker did so much research for that film. So sorry for those of you who don't know, but Anora is also about a dancer who, you know, has overcome stigmas. And so it's really
nominated for awards too. It might get Oscar nods. So
it won the Palmes d'Or at Cannes Film Festival. So that was,
so you got to get really Sean Baker to option.
Oh my God. I know.
Your film, make that into a narrative.
Right. Yeah.
Listen, Conrad, we gotta help. What do we do here? We'll be consultants.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
We'll do it. We have nothing to offer you, Paige. I'm sorry.
No, it's great.
Hey, this is really fun.
This is offering me a lot, actually, well, just to have a platform to share this story.
So we're happy to help. And please let us know when you have more information, when the film comes out. We'd love to help get the word out. So congratulations. And it's amazing to finish a film, much less make a good one. So awesome. Good luck. And don't be a stranger.
Thank you so much. Thank
Paige
you for
McKenna,
having me.
You're very welcome. More to come on Nightlight. Great to have you with me. This is Pete Schwabe on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation, 540 WAUK.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
540 WAUK News, I'm Stuart J. Wattles. Recent bird deaths along the Chicago shores of Lake Michigan have led to the Milwaukee Zoo to take action. The zoo has closed its aviary indefinitely as a precautionary measure against the spread of the bird flu. Officials say the closure aims to protect the zoo's avian population from potential exposure to the virus. Milwaukee's streetcar workers have unionized. Employees of the hop operator TransDev have voted to join the Amalgamated Transit Union Local 998. The union now represents 26 of those workers, including operators, maintenance staff, supervisors, and dispatchers. Wisconsin Republicans have introduced a bill that would force local law enforcement across the state to verify immigration status of the people they arrest. Lisa Hale has more.
We have more information today on the Republicans' effort in the Wisconsin legislature to require sheriff's departments to verify immigration status of people jailed on serious felony offenses. New Berlin State Senator Julian Bradley said sheriffs would seek reimbursement from the feds for costs incurred in complying. He noted recent media reports said that there are sheriffs that are, quote, not interested in complying with federal law. Brown, Fond du Lac, Manitowoc, Marquette, Sheboygan, Waukesha, and Washera counties currently participate in federal programs to assist ICE in immigration and enforcement actions. Dane and Milwaukee counties do not. Counties which fail to comply would risk losing up to 15% of state shared revenue. Representative Tyler August of Walworth said the bill is restricted to illegal immigrants that have committed serious acts and that have been arrested and detained by sheriffs and local police. Democratic Governor Tony Evers has already indicated that he will veto such legislation.
And that's news on 540 WAUK.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Connor Krieger. For your superhero fans and animation lovers, Invincible Season 3 has come out on Prime Video. It follows Mark Grayson, Stephen Yang, as an average teenager who discovers he's a son of the all-powerful Omni-Man. Soon after, he learns that he has powers too, when he finds out his father was actually sent to enslave the Earth and not protect it. He's forced to choose between humanity and family. The show has debuted with a 100% fresh critic score. Get y'all of Season 3 on Prime Video. The first trailer for Marvel's Fantastic Four, First Steps, has dropped, seeing Pedro Pascal as Reed Richards, Vanessa Kirby as Sue Storm, Joseph Quinn as Johnny Storm, and the Bears' Ebon Moss Bachrach becoming Ben Grimm, aka The Thing. It's a fast trailer that shows what you can expect from CGI to the cast as the characters. Check out the trailer on YouTube. Fantastic Four First Steps hits theaters July 25th of this year. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Breezy this evening, then the wind dying down later tonight. A mostly clear sky with a low in the low teens. For tomorrow, a mixture of sunshine and clouds and a high near 30. Then some snow developing for Saturday, an inch or two of accumulation. Right now it's 33.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Open that conversation with this person that you disagree with so much by trying to find the shared value, the thing that you both actually agree about. Challenge yourself to keep bringing it back to the value that we agree on and maybe even the outcome that we wish to see. Go have the tough conversation, because you know what gets better with practice? Those tough conversations.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Jane Mattenair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, 2.5 weeks into the Trump administration, we're going to talk to Randy Manner, retired Major General from the U.S. Army, and get some of his impressions. Don't miss it.
Mattenair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
Hey, producer Conrad here for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Pete is feeling a little under the weather tonight, so we're going to have a best of show with lots of fun guests. I hope you enjoy, and we'll be back tomorrow for a great show. No.
Lodi. She's in the 608. She says, favorite superhero movies? Can't pick one. First, Wonder Woman. First, Black Panther. Christopher Reeve's first Superman. And V for Vendetta. They are so amazing and masterpiece stories with the perfect casts in them. It sounds like you did okay, Judy, for someone who couldn't pick one. Yeah, those are all great. And all have already been named tonight. That's crazy that people are going right for the same movies. I guess there's a reason they're so popular. Keep those texts coming, folks. Great to hear from you guys. Always more fun when you're part of the show. What is your favorite superhero movie? We got some superhero birthdays today in the acting world. I said Batman Begins. I added Wonder Woman. And I went with The Old Guard, which, as I understand it, they're based on a comic book, and I'm going to qualify them as superhero movies. All right, Victoria Davis from the Capital Times will be here at 7:20. We'll talk movies and TV, and she's got some an inside track on the LA fires. We'll talk to her a little bit about that. Right now, joining me on Nightlight for the first time, very excited to have this guy on the show. He wrote a book called Building the Milwaukee Bucks, and he also hosts a podcast about the Packers. He's very tied into journalism and Wisconsin sports, and he joins us now on the stream, Jordan Tresky. Jordan, how are you?
Hello, I'm doing very well. How about you?
Doing great. It's nice to meet you. And it's nice that we met on Blue Sky, which you're the first person I've had back and forth with on that app, actually. And it was so easy. I loved it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very easy. It was great.
Well, welcome to the show. How's it going? How are you doing tonight?
Doing pretty good. Can't complain.
Good. You got a whole setup there because you're a podcast host. I love that. And you sound great. Thanks for being here. So, all right, you're obviously a huge Wisconsin sports fan. I don't know if you heard the show at the top of the hour or at the top of the show, but we were lamenting the Packers' loss. Conrad is a diehard Packer fan. You also host a Packers podcast. Let's get your take on that. Help Conrad through this. What is your take on what happened yesterday?
It was obviously tough, but it didn't come as a surprise. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the signs that we saw with this team, it just kind of felt like, whether it was injury or whether it was the, you know, Jordan Love just not being himself or just kind of right in the waves of ups and downs. It's never broke right in the right way that we kind of expected going into the year. And then I think a big part of it too is that the NFC just got a lot better. Their division just got finished third place with an 11-6 record. It's like, it's tough to beat all the outside factors, and then when internally things aren't as good as we wanted them to be to going in the year, I think it just kind of all factored into just a terrible loss like yesterday.
It's such a weird thing that happened in the NFC North too, because the Vikings got it right with their hire and with their GM hire and their head coach. Detroit has been this work in progress for 3 or 4 years now. They're crushing it. I mean, the Packers were the class of the conference for a while, and now they're still good, but it is a very tough division. What would you do if you were, like, let's say this offseason, what would you do, Jordan, if you could pick? Would you go hard at free agency? Where would you go in the draft? How would you address what the Packers need?
I think the big thing for them is that, you know, free agency is always this kind of white whale. We always want them to go after the big fish, but they're very choosy or selective with when they do that. When they do that in recent years, like getting Xavier McKinney, Josh Jacobs, those guys paid off for them in big ways this year. It's like, how do you keep going younger? I would probably say maybe go after someone, you know, maybe a wide receiver one or someone with kind of the caliber that can help elevate this team and keep them going on the right track so they can contend for a Super Bowl, so they can win the division. So I think going younger is not necessarily the move that I would make, but this is, you know, my thoughts 24 hours after they lose
right.
in an embarrassing fashion.
it's weird because, I mean, just, you know, they are so young. I think they're the youngest team in the league. You've got a young head coach. Maybe you need another Reggie White, a veteran presence, to come in and kind of light the fire under some guys. Not that they didn't play hard, but it just seems like that wouldn't be the wrong choice either. What would you do in the draft, do you think?
That's really tough. I mean, I think the biggest thing that they'll have to – I mean, they're at that crossroads with Jair Alexander where he's playing half of the games over the last 3 years. He's had some injuries. They're paying – big money to be a leader on this team. And when you can't play, it's like that kind of just takes your effect on what this team can do.
Right.
So I think going after improving their secondary, getting maybe another top level cornerback would help them with a defense that's certainly on the rise. I mean, everybody's going to be like, get weapons for Jordan Love. I mean, everybody lamented that when Aaron Rodgers was around and they didn't get a wide receiver in the first round, but that didn't matter much when you're getting Jordy Nelson, Devontae Adams, guys that could still certainly help. But I think it's just going to be really tough if you just want to keep adding talent in the right way and help elevate this team that's, like you mentioned, they're still so young that the clock is still very early on a lot of these guys, but that can turn on a dime and very fast.
Well said. All right, tell listeners how they can find your Packers podcast. It's Packers GSPN. Am I getting that right?
Yes. So it's called Talk of the Tundra. It's Packers GSPN on X. Our Substack page is the GSPN Eurostep Podcast Network. It has our Bucks podcast, our Packers podcast, and our Brewers podcast. So we have all the big Wisconsin pro sports teams covered in that way.
All right, let's get to your book, Building the Milwaukee Bucks. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Oscar Robertson, and the Rapid Rise of an NBA Franchise, 1968 to 1975. I found this really interesting today, reading up just on the book, and I didn't realize that the Bucks won a championship that early on in their franchise's history. That is insane to me. But let's get into that. But tell us about Building the Milwaukee Bucks.
So, I mean, I can go back to kind of the origins. I've talked and written about the Bucks for like a decade. I started at Behind the Buck Pass, which is like a fan-sided, it's kind of like a personal team blog of basically what I've been doing for the last 2 years, but that's where it was housed for many years. And that's where like a lot of my love of Bucks history really started, and really writing about things. I got to shout out Adam McGee. He's from Ireland, and ran the site for many years. And he put out this posting of, hey, I'm looking for writers. I'm looking for people that will talk about the Bucks. And I, respond to that. And 10 years later, here we are. We co-host a podcast about the Bucks and still going. But nice. So yeah, that's where it all started. And then when they won the championship in 21, it was always like these things that we've been talking about and writing about for years of, it's obviously like big names that you talk about. And it's just like, that felt like the perfect opportunity to kind of really go back and explore just how it was when they won the first time. And it was, as you would read in this book, it was a very different atmosphere for a lot of reasons. And a big part was the Bucks were just so new, and the NBA wasn't certainly not as established as they are now. So it just kind of made for like, they just got so good so fast. And I think a lot of people just had to catch up to that really quickly.
That's crazy. And it sounds like there are parallels there between the 71 champs and the 2021 champs. How did they get, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Oscar Robertson? Did they just come through the draft?
So Kareem was kind of the big fish that at the time, the NBA is certainly looking at him as the next star. And at the time, the ABA, which is rivaling like the big rival to the NBA, they're looking at Kareem as this is the guy that's going to legitimize our league and help, at the very least force a merger or even take over the NBA. So there is this bidding war. Like there's two levels to this, where the Bucks obviously had to win the coin flip, which back at the time, the first overall pick was determined by a coin flip. So they had to win the rights to him to draft him in the NBA. And then they had to do the bidding war with the ABA, which is pulling all their money together just to get Kareem to come to their league and play for the Nets. They were giving him like, ownership rights to the franchise, like pulling out all the stops to get him. And so, yeah, that was part of like the craziness of just getting Kareem to Milwaukee. And then Oscar was very much like on the other side of it, where he played for the Cincinnati Royals. They, for a good while there, they kind of just ran up against the Celtics, who won, I believe it's like 8 titles out of 10 years. So basically throughout the 60s, the Royals are kind of the second banana, or the team that just, they're never going to get to the finals.
Yeah.
And then Oscar is playing for so long and he's getting older, and they're kind of viewing him as we want to trade him. We want to move on from him. And so it's this very contentious exit for him, and the team that he picks, he looks at the Bucks. They improve from 27 wins in their first year to 56 wins when Kareem comes. And he's looking at them as, I want to play with them. They're going to be my best chance of winning a championship. And then the next year they win it. So it's just crazy how all these like dominoes just like happened so in quick succession of one another.
It's like a perfect storm.
Yeah, truly.
My guest is Jordan Tresky. He is the author of Building the Milwaukee Bucks, which is now available for pre-sale, right? Tell us how people can get the book, Jordan. I know it's not totally out yet, but they can order it, correct?
Yes. So you can certainly find it on Amazon. My publisher, McFarlane & Company, who have been super supportive and super great throughout this process, they just put it up on their website as well. So both McFarlane's direct website and Amazon will have pre-order capabilities.
All right. Let's talk about Oscar Robertson. I feel like he doesn't get – this is a guy who I believe he averaged a triple-double for a season. Like, he was a phenomenal player. Michael Jordan always talks about how Oscar Robertson was his hero growing up. But yeah. I don't hear his name mentioned much as far as NBA all-time greats goes. You're saying he was at the end of his career, sort of, or on the downside of it when he came to the Bucks?
Yeah, so he played about a decade for the Royals. And then when he comes to the Bucks, he finishes out his last four seasons, but isn't like... He's not doing, averaging triple-double during that time. He's right. More of kind of the supporting guy, but, the floor general, the leader of the team that in a lot of ways. So it's a fading Oscar Robertson, but he means so much in so many different ways, not just for the Bucks, but for the NBA itself.
That's interesting. You also mention in the synopsis of the book I read that Kareem, who I think was still Lou Alcindor, correct, when he was here?
Yes.
Okay. He was not happy or not comfortable, I should say, being the face of the franchise. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so that is part of, like, I would describe it as, like, the heart of the book is that you have Kareem's side of it where he comes to Milwaukee. It's a place that he's not very familiar. I believe it, he talks about the only reason why he knew Milwaukee is that the Braves, who... when they were in Milwaukee, played against the Brooklyn Dodgers the New York Yankees in the 1957 World Series. So it's a place that he's not very familiar with. And as he learns, it's a place that, at the time, Milwaukee was just out of the race riots in 1967. It's a very different community, a different atmosphere that he's very used to. So it's very much like when he comes to town, people are looking at him as like, it's Kareem or Lou Alcindor at the time. He's this very famous person. And he was very uncomfortable with being a celebrity and having, personal space invaded. Like, it's crazy. Like, when I was doing all this work, you're reading these newspaper listings and they're putting out his address in the newspaper.
Whoa.
And it's like, whoa. Like, they're not doing that with Giannis these days, right. Like, or Jordan Love or Aaron Rodgers once upon a time. It's just like, it's a very different atmosphere. I think for me, I'm 32 years old, soon to be 33. I did not watch Kareem Abdul-Jabbar play for the Bucks. I'm not that old, but going back and kind of getting used to how people were covered at the time, it's just a very different atmosphere. And certainly like I could, very much like equate to like someone that feels like so much is bearing on him and he's viewed as this guy that's going to save the NBA or save pro basketball. Like there's so much in his life at that time that makes it him so compelling for a lot of reasons. And then we just mentioned, it's like he changes his religion. He converts to Islam right after they win the title. He announces that he wants to be only referred to as Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And that's met very, not very well at the time. And it just adds to kind of the mystique or kind of the characterization as someone that was very devoid or aloof. That's often how he was referred to at the time.
Let's pick it up there. We got to do a very short break.
A new choice. Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. 540 WAUK.
My part-time service in the Army National Guard makes it possible for me to be more for the community I call home. My training helps me at work when I lead by example. My service in the Army National Guard allows me to keep my community and those I care about safe from threats. Learn more about how you, too, can live and serve part-time close to home by visiting NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Keeping you connected to your local community with real news and great conversation. Here's Terry Barr with the Civic Media Radio Network.
If you've never stayed overnight on a dairy farm, would you consider it? The Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association hopes you will and is working to position the state as the nation's agricultural tourism destination.
How can we grow agricultural tourism in the state of Wisconsin? Because all of our neighbors are embracing this and they're supporting agricultural tourism because they know it's an economic engine and it makes a huge impact for every taxpayer in our state.
Sheila Everhart is with the association and says from gathering eggs to corn mazes, ag tourism is on the rise. And overnight farm visits kick off as part of the NFL draft in Green Bay. Want to learn more, volunteer, or try your own ag trip? Go to WIAgTourism.com. Until next time, I'm Terry Barr.
Max Inc. on Civic Media with Mike and Wendy from Sunspot. Can you imagine the mosh pit on the bridge that could happen?
Oh, well, that's how the original series was when they moved the camera. Whenever it's like the red alert. The,
right.
Yeah. That was the mosh pit.
Yeah. And everybody had to like fake like.
Right. Lean left. Straight. Lean right.
Yeah.
Join us for all the fun with Max Inc. on Saturday night, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
A voice for real news and great conversation in Milwaukee. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Here's a good one. From the 920, Bill says, when we think of some of the greatest and toughest superheroes, we shouldn't forget the greatest American hero, and Blank Man. Greatest American Hero had a great theme song, too. That's a great one, Bill. And then 262 says, Iron Man. They're with you, Conrad. All right. Wow, great suggestions. Keep them coming, folks. What is your favorite superhero movie? That is tonight's question. Tonight's Nightlight question of the night. 855-752-4842. 855-75-CIVIC. Shout out to Aaron Carreno, who is in the hizzy from the Civic Media home office. Our operations manager. Good to see you, Aaron. All right. We're talking about the Milwaukee Bucks. A book was written by Jordan Tresky, Building the Milwaukee Bucks. Yeah, Building the Milwaukee Bucks. And we're talking about, right before the break, Jordan, we talked about Kareem. And he was Lou Alcindor, then he became Kareem, you said, after they won. And he was never really comfortable being the face of the franchise. Why is that? He seemed to kind of relax into his fame a little bit more, but never totally comfortable with it, even when he was an icon and a legend. Why do you think he wasn't comfortable with that?
I don't know. I think it's, you know, certainly an interesting time, and in that I think it's certainly informed by where the country was, where he was personally, like going back and doing all this research. You know, he's going through terrible things. Like he gets married, he converts to Islam, he gets divorced like within like a 2-year period. And a lot of these personal details he's not sharing to the press. Like, again, he's very wants to keep his privacy, but I think trying to kind of keep himself acclimated to the basketball world and being himself, like eventually, as you mentioned, like relaxing into his fame, I think that came naturally once he kind of put everything together and was just very comfortable sharing who he was. And obviously that comes with a lot of time and being in the spotlight as much as he was for a very long time.
Yeah. How much research, Jordan, would you say, how long did this take you to write? And let's do that first. And I want to ask you about interviews. Were they tough to get? Who did you like and who was evasive, if anybody? It sounds overwhelming to write a book. Just talk a little bit about that process, if you would.
Yeah, like this did not start off as a book by any means. This is Adam and I were kind of thinking about it as like a documentary project, whether it was like audio or visual. But time and just, you know, holding down a day job and doing this, you know, on the side on top of doing podcasts and stuff like that, like it got to be, I would just kind of chip away at things. So by and large, it was like 3 years from starting to do research and then submitting it to McFarlane last summer and them saying, hey, we really like the idea and we'll go ahead and publish it. So it was
that for must a long have been a time, great was, feeling.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was so validating because it's like, you know, you think of back to the days of just like, what do I do with this? Like, I've been researching. I've tried to get interviews. Like, part of it, I think I wanted to just kind of capture everything how it was at the time. But, you know, if I talked to Oscar Robertson or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, I would have been super thrilled. I did not get that chance.
Okay.
But I did talk to Jim Paschke, who did Bucks television broadcast for,
yeah,
I don't know, 35 years. And that, for me, was just huge just because this is a guy that I've would hear his voice for at least 82 games for many years. He's since retired since they won the championship, but that was just like, just such a thrill to talk to him about. It wasn't a time period that he covered himself, but he talked a lot about just what the Bucks mean. And I think that to me, like, as I kept doing this and what I wanted to get this across, I just wanted to talk about like the importance of the Bucks, where it's been a franchise that's gotten their shine when they've been good, but you know, in recent memory, until they got Giannis and until they win the championship, like naturally they were irrelevant for a very long time. So to go back and be able to kind of uncover all this stuff, I think that was just my way of kind of exploring like how much, like you mentioned, like it was just like a rocket ship to the moon.
Yeah.
So quickly. And then you just kind of like capture just like, this is just the team from Milwaukee that at the time it was, they just lost the Braves and they, sports in Milwaukee means so much. And I don't know, maybe it's my years of doing this for so long and why I gravitated towards it in the first place, but maybe I'm validating my own existence of talking about sports for a very long time, but it just something I kept coming back to throughout this whole thing.
That is the voice of Jordan Tresky. He's the author of Building the Bucks, which you can now pre-order on Amazon. So how long did it take you, Jordan? This had to be at least, what, a couple years compiling everything?
Couple years for sure. So yeah. 3 years for sure between starting research and then that getting submitted to McFarlane. And then, you know, I got married between there and my wife was such a trooper of learning about players that she'd never heard of before. And I'd be just like inundating her with details of like, yeah, he did this, he did that. And she's like, great, you know, that's great. But yeah, 3 years.
Nice. All right. So what made you, all right, it's a big commitment, whether you're making a documentary film or, you know, writing a book, what made you decide I'm going to spend 3 years of my life? Is it a love for the Bucks? Was it something to do? Was it a story to tell? What made you go over that line?
I think all of the above, frankly. Okay. I mean, I felt very comfortable talking about the Bucks for a very long time, but seeing it kind of develop and the things that would, you know, there's a lot of parallels. It's a lot of big names in kind of Milwaukee and Wisconsin history. So when you see these names come up and time again, you're just like, huh, like that connects with this, yeah, that connects with that. And I think for me, it was just a way to tell the story of the Bucks in a time in Milwaukee that, you know, whether it's been told before or not, like it was a way of me trying to bridge everything together and, yeah, tell it in a very compelling way.
That's great. All right, we're going to talk more with Jordan about his book after Civic Media's award-winning news team tells you what you need to know. And Jordan, hang on. We got a couple texters that have questions for you, so we'll cover that. And also, if you want to get good in on the fun, what is your favorite superhero movie? That is our Nightlight question of the night. We'll have more with Jordan Tresky, author of Building the Milwaukee Bucks, when we come back. This is Pete Schwabe and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond. 540 WAUK.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us for a Super Bowl preview party with Brady Ewing and Mike Clemens, and also Peter Rapine gives us a humorous look at the week in review. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Imagine home. The smell of coffee, the sound of a lawnmower, the sun's warmth on your face. Free to be yourself. Surrounded by love that helps you grow. This is a place to call home. That's an American dream we all deserve. But in 50% of U.S. states, you could legally be denied housing if you are LGBTQ+. Get the facts and hear real stories at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
CBS News Brief. Democratic attorneys general in several states vowed to file a lawsuit to stop the White House task force known as DOGE from accessing federal payment systems.
To try to block DOGE's access, believing it's an extra legal or illegal attempt to potentially jeopardize the personal data of Americans.
That's CBS's Ed O'Keefe. A federal judge temporarily blocks the deadline for federal worker buyout proposals. Jackie Simon of the Federal Workers Union urges members to read the fine print.
It's a very, very bad deal for the employee under certain circumstances. It absolves the government from any liability for anything forever.
A federal judge issues a preliminary injunction to block Trump's executive order to end birthright citizenship. Loyola Law School professor Lori Levinson.
He said that this president sees the rule of law as just an impediment to his policies. But this federal judge believes that the rule of law is a bright beacon.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.